Yeah. So what we're going to talk about is the follow-up on this topic, which is affirmative action. Now, I usually advise everybody in the class at this point to take probably a maybe an inch and a half Forstner bit. Do you know what it is? It cuts a very clean hole through wood. Forstner bits are really wonderful. They're a little bit slow. Boy, are they expensive, but they cut beautiful holes. And cut an inch and a half hole in the top of your head through the skull, and take a spoon and spoon out everything you think you know about affirmative action, and then hold it on the spoon, bend the spoon back as far as you can, and then let it fly generally in the direction of the trash can, which I guess is out in the hall. Because what you know about affirmative action is fundamentally wrong, basically wrong, completely wrong, and has no anchor in reality. So I need to set you straight on that. Okay, so we're talking then about the topic of affirmative action, which was promulgated in, was passed in 1965 by an executive order. Executive Order 11246, in fact. First, let's take a look at what an executive order is. An executive order is a presidential creation of an interpretation and extension of an existing law. So what happens is the president looks at it and says, you know, here's something that society needs to do, and we're going to base it on what this law is saying. So affirmative action is such an extension. And this, of course, took place in the Kennedy era, 1965. Hard to know exactly where to start. What we're starting with then is, let's start off with who's covered. This covers solely government contractors. People who take a contract with the federal government that has an adequate size, a contract worth $50,000 or more, which of course today is several hammers, and requires them to fulfill the contract. And here's what they have to do to fulfill the contract. Let's say they're building a hammer. They are going to have to fulfill the specifications for the handle. The handle has to be American-grown hickory wood. They have to follow the contract for the head of the hammer, which is a certain type of steel beveled on the head so it doesn't chip off and fly into somebody's eye. And, of course, they're going to have to follow the requirements for the wedge that spreads the wood to hold the wood to the handle and creates it. And, of course, the whole thing is going to have to weigh the appropriate amount, whatever the government wants in that hammer. And they are also going to be required that the, if it's a $50,000 contract or more, the contract will require that they reflect the relevant labor market in terms of availability of different types of people. So it's part of the contract that anybody that would be getting if they contract with the government. If you're building a road, if you're building a bridge, they're going to specify the steel, the concrete, the type of paint you use, and all that various things. They're also going to specify the type of workforce that you use, and specifically they want the workforce of your contracting company to mirror the relevant labor market. Sounds to me, or perhaps it sounds to you more than me, like this is a requirement. But surprisingly enough, the federal government does not consider affirmative action to be voluntary. It does not consider it to be involuntary. They consider it to be voluntary. Why would they consider this requirement to be voluntary? Right. You choose to take the contract. If you don't choose to take the contract, you don't have to mirror the relevant labor market. If you do choose to take the contract, you do have to mirror the relevant labor market. So it comes down to the idea of mirroring the relevant labor market and as a stipulation for the contract. That's good enough. The thing that a lot of people don't understand is that this affirmative action to mirror the relevant labor market is just one example of companies, businesses, organizations doing something that they feel is best for their organization. The government thinks it's best for society to require mirroring the relevant labor market. Can you think of other places where other types of affirmative action exist? At all? Go ahead, try. Yeah?
Could it be military action? Isn't that an affirmative action?
Not so much military action, but there might, I think that we could say that in terms of who is recruited, do you think? You're my military expert. Damn. Because I think that there would be, for example, there's been a push to have women across all the various aspects of the military, right? Because these are available citizens who have the qualifications to do the job. Why aren't they represented? So I think the military is making an affirmative step toward putting women into various positions in the military. Are women in combat now? That's pretty much the last bastion of men holding out, right? And flying helicopters, I saw about women doing that. Pardon?
They can operate tanks too.
I don't know if I'd want to be in a tank. They seem so damn dangerous. They seem like they might be safe during the Second World War, but not now when you can shoot practically anything through them. Anyway, so it seems like the military is an example of affirmative action. Does not really call that, but I was thinking about things like some universities. Universities, for example, have affirmative action. For example, MIT. MIT has affirmative action for American citizens. If they took the highest scoring applicants, starting at the very highest scoring and going on down, what would be the majority makeup of MIT? What would it be? It'd be extremely international. There would probably be about four Americans there, because it would be the Indians, the Pakistani, the Chinese, the Japanese, the people from Singapore, where it has the highest math scores of any tested students, et cetera, et cetera. So they cap the number of foreign applicants at 20%. Caltech, I think, does the same thing. Kind of interesting. How about affirmative action for universities? Let's see that I can give you an example of. Think about Harvard. They have affirmative action for a particular type of student. Which one is it? Come on. You guys need to be a little bit more politically savvy. Who's going to get special treatment getting into Harvard, accepted with some lower scores, for example, because they want them in there? Pardon?
Their parents have a lot of money.
Close. They have a lot of money, and
their parents were grads
from Harvard. So those kids have an incoming SAT scores of about 1280, where everybody else has a score of 1500. They want to get them in there. So, and why? Because it's for the good of the school, right? They have the largest endowment. I think maybe Stanford or Harvard has the largest endowment of a university in the nation. So what we have here then is affirmative. What about, oh, by the way, science and math. What do you know about the School of Science and Math down in Durham?
They bus people in from parts of the county.
You know what it is? It's two students typically from every county in the state, one boy and one girl. And does that mean that they that the girls necessarily, typically, School of Science and Math, you would think that the guys have the better scores. And probably first when it first started 20 years ago, they might have. But now, probably their scores are about the same. I don't know for a fact, but I would bet they're about the same. And they have the affirmative action aspect of it is two students from each county. That's an affirmative action because they're not necessarily the best from a score point of view, but they are the best from the point of view of representing taxpayers around the state. That's for sure. Taxpayers pay for the school. Science and math is a public school in that sense. So we see lots of affirmative action stuff already done for the good of some group, whatever that happens to be. They think it's best to have Americans at MIT, a large number of Americans, et cetera, et cetera. This happens to be representing the population, mirroring the relevant labor force in the organization that contracts with the government. Why is that? Because they think that's best for the population, to encourage people and a wide spectrum of people to get jobs, get people working, et cetera, and that's the way it's carried out. So affirmative action, Executive Order 11246, promulgated in 1965, was carried out in this fashion. But you say, Dr. Fox, that it was built on an earlier law. Yes, it was. It was built on a law from the late 1940s that required government contracts to go to the low-cost bidder. The low-cost bidder gets the government contract. What does this have to do with mirroring the relevant labor market?
Did you say 46?
Pardon?
You say 1946.
Yeah, late 40s. I forget exactly. I think if I had to, if I was pinned down, I'd say 48, but I don't really know. How does low-cost contract mesh with the idea of mirroring the relevant labor market for jobs? I already talked to you about this under equal employment. What happens if you decide, if you ignore the fact that in any business that you have to mirror the relevant labor market, and instead you decide that you're only going to hire all men? What's happened to your relevant labor market applicant pool?
I was going to ask. I know that before the affirmative action was put in place, but what about the Civilian Conservation Corps during the Great?
That was more along the line of building trails and stuff, wasn't it?
But
it
put only like men to work.
But that was sort of before all this happened. I don't really know anything about that. Sort of out of my ballywick. So what happens to the relevant labor market if you decide to hire only men? Pardon? What happens? You shrink the available qualified workforce. Everybody with me? Because we have to assume that some women would be qualified for this, and therefore you don't have the entire qualified workforce, as I say. You truncate the relevant labor market. You limit it. Okay, and how about if you decide of those men that you're going to hire, they all have to look like Tommy Hilfiger models. Tommy Hilfiger. They all have to look like models. You know, wire glasses, straight blonde hair, kind of cute but still kind of rugged, maybe a little bit of growth on their chin, on their square chins, right? I'm getting this description just from magazines. It's the best I can do. What happens if you decide to only hire those people?
Continue shrinking.
Continue truncating, yes, making it smaller, right? So what's your possibility of getting the best person out of this?
Small.
So you're going to be operating at inefficiencies. Also, when you limit the relevant labor market, of course, like anything else, when you cut down on the supply that people need, the price goes up, right? If I start taking air out of this room, you're going to start wanting to pay me for the air, and the price will go up as the time goes by, right? Or everybody will just... fund for the door or something. But in any case, the price of air would go up if we remove it. Same is true if you get a limited relevant labor market, the price goes up because you shrunk it down to a small portion of people who then can demand whatever price they want, and you're not getting the best people. So the idea then from the government is that they want you to mirror the relevant labor market so that you will have the lowest cost labor, which is part of the 1948 law saying that it goes to the low-cost bidder. So they do tie together. You have a better workforce, and it's a cheaper workforce. All right, so that's how this all fits together. If you take a government contract, then you are going to be required to mirror the relevant labor market as part of your contract, and under an extension of a 1948 law that requires that contracts go to the low-cost bidder, mirroring the relevant labor market clearly helps you get lower-cost labor and better labor, which is good for the contract. So that's how this fits together. Affirmative action is enforced by the OFCCP, the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Program, OFCCP. OFCCP, Office, so you can draw a little arrow off of the O, Office, Federal, OF, right, Office, OF, Office of Federal Contract Compliance Program, OFCCP. The OFCCP has inspectors that come out and look at your books to make sure that you have mirrored the relevant labor market and that you are getting the best possible employees. They will look to see effectively if your selection process is hurting a protected group. The protected groups are not the same as you might imagine. There's no protected group for creed, for example, or national origin. The protected groups are typically gender, race, I'm just going to say gender and race, that's good enough. And if the in the race situation, if the race is represented as 2% or more of the general population in the relevant labor market, then they need to be recognized in your hiring process. So 2% or more, in other words, let's say Samoans. You might have a high representation of Samoans on the West Coast, but none on the East Coast. So West Coast contracts are going to have Samoan representatives on the list, so to speak. My son went out when he was living in California, decided that he wanted to play rugby. He always liked wrestling and stuff like that, even when he was a kid. So he looked in the paper to when people were going to play rugby. He went out to this group, and there's a bunch of Hispanic guys. They were big. And he said, oh, I'm going to try playing this. So he basically started playing with these guys, and then he realized they all laughed and taunted him because they're not Hispanic. They were Samoans. And these guys were freaking huge. And I do mean huge. They come over from Samoa on visitor's permits to play rugby. That's why they're here. And there's like 15 of them living in a house in East Palo Alto, right? And there's my son, who is not small. He's like maybe 220, 6'3". But compared to those guys, he said, you run down and they don't even move for Aaron. They don't even move. They just stand there. He runs into him. He says, like hitting a brick wall. But he played with them. And as a, pickup team, and he got to play and this and that. And then, ultimately, they won the national championship for recreational rugby, which they did every year. So he said, it's going to be on TV, Dad. You can watch us play. So I turned it on. I'm looking for Aaron. He's not there. Then they went across the bench, and there's my son sitting on the bench. You know, he doesn't even have his uniform on. You know, he wasn't even picked to be playing. But then he said he was going to quit, and they had a party. He stays home, invited him to the party. So he memorized this speech in Samoan that he gave at the party. It was really great. But just the idea of all these guys coming over to play was really remarkable. Anyway, California is a popular spot for Samoans. And they, if they represent 2% or more of the population, would have to be represented, which is kind of cool. If they're citizens, obviously. So anyway, then the OFCCP comes along to inspect to see whether or not you are mirroring the relevant labor market. And here's what they look for. What they're looking for first is they're interested in representation in the relevant labor market. So what they do is they go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Census to find out, let's just use women, the number of women in the mid-level management. Number of women in the mid-level management, number of qualified in the relevant labor market. Okay, so what they do then is they look at where the contract's being let. They look at the relevant labor market, remember the geographic area from which we expect to draw a certain level of employees. They overlay onto this map the 7 steps up equal employment opportunity from basically grunt labor at the bottom to executives at the top, and in between there's skilled labor, unskilled labor, et cetera, et cetera. There's 7 steps, right? And I'm putting mid-level management, which would be somewhere around 4. I would think. And they would say that they would expect that that would be, let's say, this area here. And they look into this area here based on the Bureau of Labor Statistics to determine how many women in this relevant labor market are considered to be qualified for this job or consider themselves to be qualified for mid-level management work. So they take this number. So this is the relevant labor market, qualified women. Number qualified women in relevant labor market for mid-level level manager. So this is known as availability. That's known as availability. So this would be an actual number. If this was a population of 20,000, they're going to get a number. We could say 1,500. So they're going to have an actual number of women who are qualified to do this level of work from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which comes from the census. Okay. So we have availability, utilization. They go to the place of business that's taking the contract, and they look at mid-level managers, and they see the number of women there. What is the number of women there? Okay, so that's the utilization. The number of women divided by total at level. Back over here, we have the availability number, which would be number qualified women divided by number qualified total population.
you
qualified?
No, above that.
Yeah, relevant labor market. So it's a number of qualified women in relevant labor market for mid-level managers.
What's that equation? That's like an equation? Number of qualified women?
Right, divided by the number of qualified total population in that relevant labor market. This would obviously be men plus women, right? And the same is true here. Total at the level, men plus women at that level. So now, to do the math, you simply would take this and divide it by this, which is to say utilization divided by availability. We'll go over this a little bit more slowly here in a minute. Make sure you understand it. Why is this important? Because government contracts are lucrative, and you want them, to put it bluntly. So what we have here is utilization, that's this, divided by availability, which is this. And what that gives us is the concept of parity. P-A-R-I-T-Y. Is the company in parity, which is to say, are they compliant? Have they mirrored the relevant labor market? So if their utilization is 20% and the availability is 20%, what's the parity going to be? One. And that would be ideal. It would be perfect. But the government, of course, cuts you the same slack as they cut you for adverse impact proof. Do you remember what the rule was there?
80%.
Pardon?
80%.
Yes. So here we have a slack figure of 80%. They'll, ideal would be 1, but they'll accept greater than or equal to 0.8. It's essentially an indicator of adverse impact as well as an indicator of whether or not you would be mirroring the relevant labor market under an affirmative action plan.
What is indicated by 0.8?
That the number of women that you have compared to the total. Let's say, for example, this is 10 women and there are 100 employees at this level, mid-level manager. So this would be, 0.1. So go back over here and you compare it to what's here. The number of qualified women over the total might be 0.2. So are they in compliance? Well, you do the division, 0.1 divided by 0.2. And what's it going to come out to be? Which is 0.5. Is 0.5 within parity?
No.
So they have not made correct utilization of the relevant labor market qualified women.
So what would they do at higher level managers?
Thank you for asking. So we have our parity investigation to determine whether or not they're in compliance or not. The next step is known as goals and timetables. Goals and timetables. This was about half of the semester at Virginia Tech. In my
book. Will you spell parity again?
P-A-R-I-T-Y.
Parity?
P-A-R-I-T-Y. Like a very small parrot.
Those are goals and what?
Hmm?
Goals and what?
Timetables. Goals and timetables is the OFCC comes and says you're not in compliance at mid-level management, you're in compliance at one of these levels, you're out at another, and they go over the 7 levels to determine whether or not you are appropriately mirroring the relevant labor market for race and gender, and also disability in a small way, very small way. In fact, not really a factor, but they're going to look at it. So, if you're not in compliance at one of those levels, it'll be part of your goals and timetables discussion where you write this up. We recognize that we're falling short of our goal of parity at mid-level management for women, so we are going to try to find appropriate women for this job. Please note that you do not have to go in and fire enough men in order to hire the women. That's not necessary. What's necessary is for you to actively recruit. Didn't I talk to you about the University of Washington when I talked to them on the phone about getting a job? Right, and they said, we're not hiring any men. We're only looking for women. Why? Because their entire management staff at the University of Washington in, when was it, 1832? Somewhere around in there. 1988. That's how long ago it was. In 1988, the University of Washington had all men in the management department and in the business school, probably, for that matter. And so they were under pressure to mirror the relevant labor market as a quasi-governmental agency, University of Washington. And the state of Washington also has confirmative action. Cool. And so they were looking for qualified women to teach in the business school. And they basically gave me the heave-ho. Did I care? No, because I understood completely where they were coming from. Maybe other people might have been offended, but I wasn't. So what we're looking at here with the goals and timetables is a written discussion of whether or not the company finds itself to be in compliance with mirroring the relevant labor market or not, and how they hope to address the shortfalls at the various levels, which usually means hiring qualified women for jobs that become vacant during the course of the contract. That's pretty much it. Affirmative action is one of those mildly toothless laws. In other words, if you fail to comply by the end of the contract, what happens? Nothing. Except you may not get another contract because you haven't fulfilled the stipulations, the requirements, right, the various measures required by the government. It's like you use crappy steel in the bridge or something. You didn't use the entire relevant labor market, therefore your labor force was probably more expensive than it should be, in theory. So what we're looking at here then is the idea that it may harm you in the future. It won't harm you from the government's point of view. They're not going to put anybody in jail because of this. But if you have a government contract, you're going to go through this kind of an analysis for race and gender at, and remember, race has to be 2% or more of the relevant labor market to be used or investigated. And then if you're short, you're going to try and set a goal of getting it back in compliance of mirroring the relevant labor market, and the timetable is when you hope to have that done by, so that they can come and talk to you about it. Well, my advice is that when you have one of these contracts, and there's a possibility that all of you will work for a company at one time or another that has government contracts, you're going to be exposed to this kind of thinking, that you do not, N-O-T, capital N-O-T, red letters, develop an adversarial relationship with the OFCCP officer, right? There's really not a lot of pressure here. But your main thing is to be able to show that you're trying to get the company compliant, that you're advertising completely across the appropriate relevant labor market for qualified women or qualified Samoans or whatever it might happen to be. And that you recognize that there's shortfalls and you're trying to find people to change your numbers. So that's the way this stands with affirmative action. It's not very difficult to understand once you've been over it a few times. It's basically an adverse impact investigation. And what we're looking at here is what they feel, and I tend to agree with them, is that representation of the relevant labor market is the best way to get inexpensive qualified labor and to encourage you to find the best people across the relevant labor market. All right, that's it for today.